The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning. So for the last few weeks that I've been here, I've been talking about five aspects of or five qualities of our mind that support our ability to be present and to meditate. These five qualities can even be thought of as the qualities that support our skill of being able to be aware in the present moment. And these five qualities are known as the five faculties, and they are confidence, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And as I think I said last time, that these five really can be looked at as qualities that support our developing any skill, that we need to basically, through some kind of wisdom of knowing what we're trying to do, whether it's a skill of playing the piano or meditating, we need to have some understanding of what we're trying to do. That's the wisdom associated with the art of the practice. And then some sense of confidence that we can engage and actually do it. And then some energy applied to practice, energy applied to engaging, and awareness, mindfulness, to begin to see how do we engage with this activity. What supports our improvement in terms of developing more skill? What kinds of things we do that get in the way of that skill? That's mindfulness, awareness. And then concentration, which often develops, it develops definitely in our meditation practice, this quality of mind that becomes more stable and connected to the experience. The quality of concentration isn't necessarily a narrowed focus, but is a kind of a sense of being, having all aspects of our attention dedicated to the task at hand, which again can happen whether we're playing the piano or engaging in a sport or engaging in meditation. And then these feed back into more deeply understanding the ways the wisdom or the tools or the skills that support the practice itself, which again brings us back to wisdom. So these kind of the five qualities that we can cultivate that will support our ability to be present, that will support our ability to begin to notice what's happening for us, to connect to our experience moment to moment. And why we might do that, you know, why do we connect to the present moment? What's the point of that? That it's, well, there's several things. I mean, just I'll mention just a couple. First of all, the present moment is pretty much the only place anything ever happens. If we're not aware in the present moment, if we're in thought, if we're lost in thought and fantasy of the future, we're not noticing what's happening to us right now. If we're lost in the past, remembering what's happened to us, again, we're not noticing what's happening to us right now. Now, these thoughts, what are these thoughts? I mean, we think of the past, the future. What is the past? What is the future? It's basically, if you reflect on it, the future is nothing more than thoughts arising in the present moment about what might happen. And the past is nothing more than thoughts arising in the present moment about what did happen. So really, actually, the present is the only thing that actually exists. And so if we're lost in our thoughts, we're actually missing our lives. We're missing what's actually happening to us moment to moment. And this place of the present moment is also a place where we can make choices. It's a place where we can choose to we see our choices, actually. The present moment is the place where we make choices, and it's the place where we can see our choices, the choices that we make that guide us towards the unfolding of our lives. And in the understanding of the Buddhist teaching, these choices, kind of the motivation that comes along with these choices, is what guides us either towards happiness and a peace, or towards stress, suffering, dissatisfaction. And the choices that we make are very intimately connected with whether we feel more peaceful or feel more stress and suffering. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about one of these qualities today. I talked about it some the last time I was here, and I didn't quite finish, so I thought I'd talk some more about this quality of energy, ways to cultivate it, ways to notice when it's out of balance, and how to begin to bring it into balance. Now, energy is a pretty important quality. I mean, we're not alive without energy. And whatever we do has some energy behind it. However we engage in any activity, there's some energy behind that engagement. And with meditation practice in particular, many of us tend to over-effort. We over-engage, thinking that somehow if we push hard enough that we will manage to be able to be present. That if we can, in this moment, be present for the whole next 5 minutes, that will serve us. But all that we can really be present for is a moment. And part of this art around energy is learning just how much does it take, actually, to engage for this moment. It's very light, actually. It's very light, the energy, in terms of being here for a moment, right now. Can you notice the feeling of your hands? You notice the sensations of your hands. Can you notice the sensations of your buttocks on the chair or cushion? How about your feet? Can you feel your feet? And how hard is that to feel those sensations, to actually notice in this moment, this is what's happening in that place where we direct our attention? Usually it's not very hard for just a moment or two to be connected with our experience. But what is challenging is to maintain that awareness over time. And that's where the art of meditation comes in, and the art of guiding our energy towards this being present, because essentially meditation is about just maintaining a presence of mind, staying connected with our experience, noticing when we've gotten lost, and reconnecting with something happening in the present moment so that we can be completely and fully aware of experience in the present moment. And so it doesn't take much energy for a split second. It is hard to maintain that over a period of time. And that's where we have a little misunderstanding about how to apply energy. We seem to think that some kind of vigor or pushing or pressing our attention, trying to hold on to our attention, is what will help us to stay present for longer. And that generally just makes us more tired. It actually uses up energy to try to do that. And instead, one of the ways to more skillfully engage with this practice is to just make enough effort to be mindful for a few seconds. So right now, be aware of your breathing, whether you're breathing in or breathing out. Just notice. And just enough effort to stay present for the half of breath. And then when that's finished, remind yourself to make enough effort to stay present for the next half a breath. So in a way, this quality of engaging with energy, the practice of engaging with energy, is kind of about how frequently we remind ourselves to connect with our experience. So while I'm talking, see if you can stay connected with the breathing in and breathing out in this very light way. Just know that you're breathing in, and that's all you need to know for that time. Just breathing in. And then, again, when you're breathing out, just know that you're breathing out. And you will forget. You will forget. And then when you remember, you just come back to that very light touch. Engaging with this kind of light touch of trying to stay present actually serves to create more energy. It's kind of paradoxical in a way. We usually think about needing to use energy to make effort. But this kind of effort of just a very light touch, just a little reminding, breathe in, and that's enough. Breathe out, that's enough. Just a couple of seconds of connecting with experience. That's all we need to do moment to moment, is just a few seconds of that active connecting. This kind of practice, where it's just very light that way, actually builds a momentum of energy. So this kind of effort tends to create energy instead of consume energy. And we can use this actually in many things that we do. I find sometimes if I'm vacuuming the carpet, you know, it's like I'm scrubbing the carpet with the vacuum cleaner. It's like, whoa, wait a minute, you know, the vacuum does the work, you know. I just need to kind of gently push and pull, you know. So I think we tend to overdo it a lot in many of our activities. And so kind of checking in throughout the day, this will support you in your mindfulness practice as well. Checking in throughout the day. Am I making more energy effort than I need to chop this vegetable or to type this email or whatever it is? I mean, am I investing more mental energy and physical energy even than is necessary for this task? I'm just seeing if you can back off, keeping it light. When I play with this, at least I tend to be an over-efforter. I mean, there are some people that tend to be more drifters and a little bit more lax in their mental energy. And if that's the case, then it's helpful to try, you know, be a little more attentive about reminding yourself to be present. For me, it's helpful. And for those people who tend to be over-efforting or pushing too hard, one tool that I like to use or to recommend is just to kind of ask the question, how little energy do I need to make in order to be here right now? What's the least amount of energy that I need to use in order to stay connected? There's another analogy that I like around this. I don't remember if I mentioned this last time. I might have. And this is going along with the way that just using that reminding supports that building of a momentum of energy, a momentum of that connecting with experience. And it's an analogy around riding a scooter. Did I use this last time? Do you remember? I did. I used this last time. So, you know, if you're riding a scooter, when you first start riding a scooter, there's no momentum going, right, on the wheels. So you have to tap the ground. You have to kind of tap the ground and keep it going. And in order to balance that scooter, you need to tap the ground kind of frequently. And that's kind of the way the energy or the efforting works initially in our meditation practice. We need to remind ourselves kind of frequently. Okay, pay attention to the in-breath. Okay, that's done. Pay attention to the out-breath. And just keep doing that. But as you ride the scooter, And as you continue with this engagement, with this effort in meditation to stay connected with the present moment, the momentum builds on the scooter. You know, you can actually ride for a while before the scooter starts wobbling, and then you get a sense of when it starts wobbling, and you put your foot down and you tap again, and then you pick up on the momentum again. And so it's kind of similar with our meditation, that we, after a while of engaging this way, we don't actually need to remind ourselves as frequently. We may more naturally be present for 2 or 3 breaths without having to remind ourselves, because the momentum, the energy, has built up a little bit. And so we need to kind of learn how to tune that reminding to meet the level of awareness that's already present. Kind of like we tune that with the riding on the scooter. You can start to get a sense of when the mindfulness is wobbling. You know, that you know, you're present and you're aware and you're just starting to notice, oh, you know, the mind's starting inclining to think about something, and oh, okay, just come back, remind yourself to be present. So you can get familiar with that. You can actually begin to recognize when the mind starts wandering, just kind of losing touch with what we're paying attention to. At that point, just tap again. It's like that scooter tapping to keep the momentum going. So this works for paying attention to breathing in this way that I've mentioned, you know, in-breath, out-breath, you know, kind of staying connected to the rhythm of the in-breath and the out-breath. And this is a good tool to use, you know, say every half-breath, just a gentle, subtle, quiet reminder. Okay, connect again, reconnect. This is called, you know, aiming the attention, basically just reconnect. Reconnect with the experience of breathing. And we can also use this as our, in the guided meditation I was talking about, not necessarily needing to stay with the breath in our meditation, that when something else is strong, when hearing is strong, or a body sensation, or a mood, emotion, whatever is present, we can turn our attention to that. And we can also use this gentle reminding as we're paying attention to anything, hearing, for instance. Just stay present for just a moment and just remind yourself, what am I aware of? Or just using a little tiny quiet thought in the mind to remind yourself, what's happening? What am I aware of? Or even just a recognition of just this, we're here. Or something to just help you remember to stay connected with the experience. It can be very simple, but very light. It's a very light touch. Supports for this energy. That, you know, the energy, we can use this gentle efforting to make energy. Effort creates energy when it's done in this very gentle way, this relaxed way, as opposed to the way of kind of holding on or trying to hold on to being present. It's much more, it's kind of more a sense of, okay, I'm present. How long can I ride this wave of being aware? And then remind myself again. It's kind of more settling back and just allowing yourself to connect to the mindfulness that's already there, to the awareness that's already there. If you can say to yourself, am I aware, or what am I aware of, or breathing in, breathing out, then you have the awareness, and it's just a matter of connecting with the experience. One way or one tool that supports this connection with experience, and that supports this cultivation of energy, is interest and curiosity. So if you're interested in what you're doing, it tends to be that the energy comes along more naturally, that we don't have to try so hard. And you may know this from any other skill that you've perhaps developed. You know, learning how to play an instrument or learning how to engage in a new art, you know, painting or whatever you're working with, that at certain points the interest is very strong in terms of being engaged and connected. And when we are interested, there is a natural energy that follows with that. And so if there's any way that you can support an interest in being present, there can be some reflections that support this interest. I mean, the reflection I offered at the beginning, for instance, that the present moment's the only place anything happens, that can help to bring some interest to our being with what happens in the present. Sometimes we can get interested in seeing how our minds work. That as we engage in this practice, we actually get an education in how our minds function, in the ways in which we struggle and suffer. And it seems initially that it would be not something that you'd particularly want to do, to pay attention to the ways that you struggle and suffer. But as we engage and actually notice how our minds engage with things in the world and then react to them and think about them and then reverberate in those thoughts and build up momentum around an emotion of perhaps frustration or irritation. As we watch this process, we begin to get interested in it and interested in recognizing how this happens. That we have so many habits and patterns of ways that we do things that lead us and land us in struggle. And this practice of awareness, even in our daily lives, the practice of awareness can begin to educate us into how we end up going down that habitual pathway. And we can start to see that in the moment, if we are aware in the moment, that we can have a choice. It's possible to choose not to engage in a pattern or habit. We think we're defined by our habits and patterns so often, but they are just habits. And because they are just habits, it's possible to change them. And the place they can be changed is through witnessing in the present moment, being aware in the present moment when we're moving in that direction. And so interest, particularly, I found for myself, the interest in what's happening around this pattern, what's happening around this suffering, that has become quite strong for me. And that really fuels the practice. It fuels the energy. So the energy can be enhanced through this cultivation of curiosity. And then the last piece I want to talk about before I open it up for some discussion is a balancing of energy. As we engage with our practice and working with energy and working with effort, we at times find the energy is high, at times the energy is low, and that's not particularly a problem. The balance, you know, in terms of learning how to balance this energy, it's kind of like we fall off on either side. At times we get dull and sleepy, and at times we get restless and feel like we can't sit still. So the energy kind of will waver between these two. And so it's not particularly a problem that happens. It's just beginning to notice, oh, the energy's a little dull. Are there things I can do to support a rising of the energy? So to get familiar with this quality of energy in our meditation and to recognize when it's a little low, maybe drifting off into daydreams or feeling dull or sleepy, those are indications that the energy is a little low. Or perhaps the energy is a little high. There's a feeling of restlessness The body feeling just like, you know, I can't sit still, or the mind just like a ping pong ball pinging around everywhere in the mind, that restless state of mind. Sometimes that's a reflection of kind of a high energy state. And are there things you can do to settle that down? So there are some skillful means to use if the energy is a little low. Some very simple things that you can do. You can stand up. It's always fine to do standing meditation or walking meditation. You can open your eyes. Opening eyes is a great tool, actually, when you're sleepy. You know, if you're feeling dull, just opening your eyes and allowing light to come in seems to energize the mind. It brings a little bit more energy in to the system to open your eyes. So standing, opening your eyes, doing walking meditation. And then there's some things you can do mentally if you can. I mean, it's the sometimes you can do this. If you're finding that your mind is kind of dull, sometimes you can just try to be a little more careful about that connecting piece. You know, so for instance, you might see if you can notice the very first sensation that tells you that the in-breath is beginning. Or perhaps if you're doing hearing meditation, can you stay connected with the sound of that car until it's no longer apparent? You know, so to getting a little bit more precise around the engagement with the attention in our meditation. And then on the other side, if we're too restless, again, sometimes actually engaging in something like standing can help with restlessness, walking can help because there's more energy in the body and it can help to dissipate that energy. But if you do that, if you engage in like walking, it's helpful to kind of recognize where the feeling of walking feels like in sync with that energy. Where does it feel comfortable? Because we can end up kind of either overexerting and wearing ourselves out, or there's a way that we might engage in walking that would actually make us more restless. You know, that we might make us more restless to do that. So you need to kind of notice how you're engaging and inclining towards balance as you are practicing with restlessness. A mental tool with restlessness, and this is one of the ones I usually use when my mind or body are restless. Often it feels like, you know, with restlessness, at least to me, it kind of feels like there's an incredible amount of vibratory energy throughout the body and throughout the mind. It's just like all of these vibrating things just pinging around inside the body. And having a kind of an idea, an image, or in fact, that the energy that is pinging around in the body can go beyond the edges of the body. You know, kind of like allowing them to get as big as they want. You know, let them ping around inside the whole room. It gives them more space. It feels, you know, like if it's holding in the body, it kind of feels like a pressure cooker. And it's like taking the lid off the pressure cooker. Just allow that energy to expand. And for me, that really supports a settling of that energy. Just to let it get as big as it wants to. And that begins to point me to an alternative around working with these ways, you know, these kind of off-balance energy experiences. You know, when one way, I mean, we learn about what being on balance is through understanding what off-balance is. So it's not a problem. I mean, it's just our minds educating themselves. Another way to balance the energy, and it's kind of a more organic way, in a sense, is to not try to actively do anything about this energetic experience, the dullness, the sleepiness, or the restlessness, but simply to be mindful of it. What is it like to feel restlessness? Allowing that expansion can make it easier to feel that restlessness. So just allow that expansion and then just hang out in the space of all of that energy reverberating in the larger room. What does it feel like to be a human being who's feeling that restlessness? Every state of mind, of body, is impermanent. If it's not fed, if it's not encouraged, it will end. And one beautiful way to allow that kind of organic impermanence to happen is to just be mindful of the state. Often when we're in a state of restlessness, there's something going on in our minds that is actually fueling that restlessness. Some thought or some emotion or some anxiety or some worry that's kind of niggling away at us. And those thoughts are actually, you know, it's like putting the gas on the gas pedal. And this other way that I'm talking about, just being mindful of this experience of restlessness, is kind of like allowing the car to go into neutral. You know, if we think about our energetic experience being like a car going down the freeway, being mindful is like allowing that car to go into neutral. And at some point, the car will come to a stop because we're no longer putting our pedal, the gas pedal, to the floor. And so the mindfulness serves that purpose. So we can simply hang out with the energetic experience of restlessness, and it will eventually end. And that will bring us into balance more organically, in a way, more naturally. We'll come back into balance because that energy has dissipated, and we, you know, it's kind of like a swing, you know, it's swinging from this energetic side and it swings through and it will find this point of balance. And then it may swing through the other way and then we end up on the side where we're kind of dull and sleepy. And again, we can on that side as well, rather than trying to change the state of dullness or sleepiness, rather than trying to fix it, we can simply see if we can recognize, what does it feel like to be sleepy? What does it feel like to be dull? Another analogy, this is one of my favorite analogies. Being mindful is kind of like reflecting our experience. There's experience going on, and the mindfulness just kind of reflects. This is what's happening right now. Just like there's this pure, clear mirror of reflection. And it can reflect anything. It can reflect pleasant experience. It can reflect unpleasant experience. Now think about that mirror. And usually we think about the mirror as serving the purpose of reflecting. And so we want to be able to see. I mean, we have this idea that the mirror reflects. We want to be able to see what we're looking at. So we stand in front of the mirror. We want to be able to see ourselves reflected back. And that's kind of the view we have about mindfulness too, that we want to be able to see what we want to look at. So, you know, we try to turn our attention to the breath. We want to be able to see that. When we're dull and sleepy, that's hard to do. So it feels like we can't be mindful when we're sleepy. Now, to go back to this mirror analogy, think about that mirror coated with steam after you've taken a shower. The mirror doesn't function very well as a mirror in that place. You stand in front of it and you can't see your reflection. But you know, because of the way mirrors work, that that mirror is perfectly reflecting every drop of steam of water that's on the mirror. It's doing its job perfectly. It's just reflecting something other than what you want it to reflect. And so with sleepiness, the mind is kind of in that state. It's actually reflecting the mindfulness. If you're aware of mindful in a state of sleepiness, your mindfulness is reflecting that dull state of mind. And it is kind of painful to try to make it reflect something else. It's unpleasant to try to turn that attention towards the breath, because it's naturally what it's reflecting is that dullness. When I learned this, boy, it made my meditation a lot easier. You know, it's just like, oh, sleepiness is happening right now. Okay. I don't have to fight this. Just try to be aware of it. Or dullness, the mind feeling kind of dull and spaced out. Just that's what we can know. And the mind can perfectly clearly know that dullness, that sleepiness. And you may fall asleep in doing that, but no worries, you'll drop and then you'll wake up and you'll be back and can pay attention to the sleepiness again. So again, that practice is a little more organic way, because when the mind meets that sleepiness, it's actually meeting what's already happening. And that actually can bring some energy into the mind. And so it very naturally adds a little bit of energy, and the mind can come back into a little bit more balance. So there are these different approaches to balancing the energy. You know, the active choosing to do something, and that's fine. If you find that trying to be mindful of either the restlessness or the sleepiness just sends you spinning out into thinking or falling asleep all the time, then it might be time to engage in one of these more active practices to help to balance the energy. But if you can be mindful of them, and it is possible to be mindful of them, I mean, that's one of the key things I want to convey here, because so often in our meditation practice we believe, or there's this view, oh, I can't be mindful right now because I'm so sleepy. If you have enough awareness to know that you're sleepy, to say that to yourself, you have enough awareness to be mindful of the sleepiness, of the dullness. If you're just sleeping, you know, if you're just falling asleep and waking up and falling asleep, then you might want to stand up or engage in something that will help to raise the energy. But experiment with this, paying attention to the sleepiness and to the restlessness. It's actually very interesting, which again, you know, can bring up some of the energy. So, what are your thoughts? What are your any questions or comments or about anything at all? It doesn't have to be. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I read a book that's probably, you're probably familiar with it, Eckhart Tolle's New Earth. He also wrote a book called The Power of Now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're using analogy. So I have one that incorporates the energy of now, of being present. I think I got this idea, my idea or this analogy was triggered by, he was really discussing identity, but this, it also fits now and energy, which is to imagine this body is as a vacuum cleaner, and that the dust that I'm about to vacuum up is the future. The dust that's in the bag is the past. Uh-huh. I'm not the dust that I'm going to pick up in the future, and I'm not the dust that's in the bag. What I am is the energy of the vacuum now.
Ah, uh-huh. That's lovely. The kind of the that pulling or that energy.
Uh-huh. But it's only happening uh-huh. now.
That's right. It's only happening now.
And that's all that and that's all that this body is what I'm vacuuming. What the body is, or the mind and the body are vacuuming now.
Uh-huh. Yep. That's right.
And the energy yep. is the pulling.
Uh-huh. Huh?
And that's so, you know, like I said, you know, the dust in the front and the dust in the bag are about can be about identity.
Yes, absolutely. We do identify with that. What we identify with what is happening, as opposed to, I mean, what we are is a process of just change and flow, and but we identify somehow with the things that are happening. It's like we latch onto those, the dust, as you say. That's a nice analogy, that it, all it is dust.
that's right. But, you know, as you were just saying, again, you know, that it's we are what we're taking in at the moment. It's what we're taking in and processing at the moment. But once it goes through us, it's gone.
Yep. Yep.
That's all.
Yeah. Thank you.
One thing I found myself doing a lot recently is my meditations are more contemplations. There's all this stuff coming up, and it just keeps coming, and I don't try to make it stop or I don't encourage it, but I just try to notice it. But it's been helpful to kind of actively try to figure out, like, what's the cause of this? What's the cause of that? What, you know, what am I holding on to that causes this, you know? Can that be useful as well, to actively contemplate things like that?
It can. It depends on, you know, how much thinking you're doing around it. I mean, the contemplation can be more of a wordless understanding that happens because we see. You know, it, actually, you know, when we suffer, when we fall into situations that create suffering for us. Now, so by the contemplation, do you mean actually calling up a situation that you're struggling with or something like that?
No, I'll be meditating and it will just come up. I don't actively try to bring it.
Okay.
You know?
And so then you're just noticing what has come up.
Yeah, like having insights into why this pattern could have developed over the years or things like that.
So, yeah, that kind of thing can help. You know, that. Let me see. How can I've just a whole explosion of ideas happened in my mind. See if I can organize them. So, what's happening to us as we cling on to things, as we struggle, as we suffer? Everything that we are suffering about, and this is another reason why it's so great to be aware in the present moment. Our suffering is actually, our struggles, our dissatisfaction, it's created in the present moment. There are causes and conditions, you know, things from history, ways that we were with our families, you know, that are feeding into this present moment. But the suffering is actually being actively recreated in this moment. And the exploration around the suffering or the struggle or the dissatisfaction, we can really kind of take an interest in how is it coming together in this moment? Because all the information that we need about that pattern is happening right now. And in that observation, in just noticing this thing coming together, you may notice a memory from the past. And it may click, oh, that's part of why this pattern is so strong for me. But you don't actually necessarily need to think about the past. And, you know, you may have a theory about why something might be the case. And I certainly have had that. I mean, you know, I had a theory for a long time about why I had this feeling of self-hatred. I had a very strong pattern of self-hatred. And I had a theory about it, but I didn't have direct evidence about it. You know, it just seemed like it made sense, you know, that particular pattern of events made sense that it would lead to this habit of self-hatred. And at some point in the process of observation, there was an actual direct connection, and I did directly see, oh, that's how this pattern from the history connects in to this present moment and has this pattern of self-hatred arising. That recognition, that connection from history into the present moment, the actual recognition, not the idea, not the thought, not the theory, but the actual seeing of it happening in the present moment, that was very interesting and very, it was like very freeing in a way. It felt, oh, I see how this happens. And actually, in that particular experience, I kind of thought, oh, I figured this one out. You know, I'm free of this pattern. But no. It actually shocked me the next time the self-hatred came. I was like, wow, I thought this was done. I mean, I understood this. I understood how it came together. Now, that insight, I would call that a kind of a psychological insight into how the pattern came to be. That insight actually was very supportive, because what it did, what it actually supported, was that it took the identity out of the pattern, because I saw it then just as causes and conditions coming from history. And it was a visceral understanding that it is just causes and conditions coming from history. It was completely visceral. And so when the pattern of self-hatred came up, there was no longer such a sense of, oh, this is me, I hate myself. It was just like, oh, this is a pattern of self-hatred coming up, I can watch this. So it took the sting out of the pattern to have made that connection. But, you know, I had done therapy about this pattern for years, and it hadn't done much with, I mean, just thinking about the history, just recalling these experiences, you know, trying to make connections, it hadn't really touched the pattern at all. That direct seeing of the connection through mindfulness really helped to have the identity drop away around it. And then it was much easier to be with that pattern when it happened. And then it really could fall apart after another period of observing just that self-hatred arising. You know, it's just like, oh, at some point just recognize, oh, this is the thought. That's all this is. This is just a thought. It only has the reality that the mind gives it in terms of believing it. And at that point, it kind of disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I'm talking about, something like that. Maybe
that kind of contemplation is very helpful.
Yeah.
But letting go of the trying to think about or remember.
Right. No, but the way you just said, that's kind of what I was talking about.
Uh huh. So. Yeah. Great. Keep doing that.
Your answer to Matt just gave me some insight into the thing in the suttas about the Buddha. On the, you know, when he was sitting under the Bodhi tree, seeing all his past lives, and how this led to that, to, you know, that led to this other thing, and just sort of seeing. I've been reading the Ajahn Jeff's book about becoming, and how, you know, you desire something and you grab onto it, and that pulls you into a renewed existence. The second noble truth isn't just that craving is the cause of suffering, but it's craving that leads to renewed existence,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
is the source of suffering. And what I heard was you describing an experience of seeing how past causes and conditions had led to the arising of,
yes.
a moment of renewed existence.
Yes. So that renewed existence of self-hatred.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Yep. A particularly painful moment of craving that led to renewed existence, or probably in this case, craving for non-existence or something like that. And it gave me an insight into, because I've always sort of thought, what is this thing? He's getting enlightened. That seems like good news. But what is this thing where he's dwelling on his past lives? It feels so extraneous. It's like, no, he's sitting there going, dude, check out how this happens over and over again. How many times have you died and grasped, and in the moment of death, you've clung to some desire, and it pulls you right back into existence in a new life?
That's very interesting. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that may be part of what was going on, was just recognizing those patterns, not thinking about them, but just witnessing the patterns that have been there. And that's a lot of what we do in meditation, is we witness our patterns. And when we can get to the place where those patterns can just kind of slip through the mindfulness, then there's not that grasping onto that. And it just, that pattern just goes whoop, and then falls away.
It
can happen over and over again, that same pattern. But in a moment, it'll just be, oh, there it is again. Whew, okay, and then it's gone.
I'm just sort of imagining him reflecting on those, you know, however many hundreds of thousands of lifetimes of renewed existence, and then finally getting to a point of just saying, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, that sambhaga, that just like, no, mm-hmm. no more.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, it's one right next to you.
Last week, the woman, I've forgotten her name, she was just
Chris?
Lovely.
Chris?
Chris, and she talked about knowing. And what a delight, what a gift it is to know what's happening to yourself at any moment. And so it doesn't matter circumstances, doesn't matter old patterns. And I just see old patterns coming up all the time. It just seems like it's aging, I think, that I start to see patterns that I've had that was not only harmful to others but harmful to myself. But these patterns just keep coming and coming and coming. I just, maybe I just need to let go of them more easily than I do.
Yeah, well, and to not have often the patterns keep coming and there's a judgment around them.
That's exactly it.
And if there's a judgment, it actually kind of, paradoxically, it holds them in place.
Yeah.
And so needing to actually recognize, oh, there's a judgment around this. That's actually what's going on.
There's a judgment.
And over time of being able to just meet that judgment, that then will fall away. And then you can just meet the habit. I mean, it's kind of like that, kind of like seeing kind of the thing that holds it in place. When we can see what's holding a pattern in place. And sometimes judgment actually does that. I mean, it's bizarre because, you know, we think that the judgment is what's going to, you know, if we beat ourselves up enough, it'll be the inclination to not do that thing in the future. But it doesn't seem to work that way. So be kind to yourself about the fact that there is judgment. And over time, that may dissipate, and then you can just be with the pattern, and then it's just like unflowering of petals, just like we just keep seeing more and more and more.
I just say 10 days after I'm dead, I'm going to let go of judgments. Yeah, if I'm lucky.
We only have a minute, so why don't did you have something? Just
I have sleep apnea. And as you were bringing up that, you know, when people go to sleep and back, and I've been using a machine, and I have the awareness or mindfulness now how much that machine is helping me, and that as it comes and goes, it was very helpful for me to hear you talk about that.
Uh-huh, great. Yeah, from what I understand, those machines can be incredibly helpful, and that really can raise your energy. It can really raise your energy. So thank you all for your attention, and I'll see you next week.